This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Richard Mabian hosts Sierra Club's lobbyist, Zach Pistora, who will give us a look into the political situation as pertains to the environmental state of Kansas, as well as some information from his recent trip to the Balkan region. But first, I'm naturally with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports, in a setback for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and their supporters, on Sunday evening, 1 hour before the start of the second presidential debate, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals lifted an injunction that had stopped construction on the Dakota Access Pipeline, allowing work to resume. In its order, the court noted, quote, "But ours is not the final word. A necessary easement still awaits government approval, a decision Corps counsel predicts it is likely weeks away. Meanwhile, intervener DAPL has rights of access to the limited portion of pipeline corridor not yet cleared, where the tribe alleges additional historic sites are at risk," end quote. ENN.com reports, for the first time in history, a group of bees in the United States will be protected under the Endangered Species Act following a recent announcement from the wildlife officials. The group of bees, who are commonly known as yellow-faced bees because of the markings on their faces, are endemic only to the Hawaiian Islands. While there are dozens of species, scientists identified several of them who are at risk of extinction and have been calling for their protection for years. The listing, which protects seven species, unfortunately doesn't come with the designation of critical habitat, but hopefully that will change after the Fish and Wildlife Service analyzes more sites. Gregory Kub, Conservation and Restoration Team Manager for the FSW in Honolulu, told the Associated Press that for now the listing will allow for recovery programs, more funding, and will limit their harm from outside sources. MidwestEnergyNews.com reports, community solar, already growing in popularity among Missouri's rural electric cooperatives, now is coming to the state's largest investor-owned utility. Another of the state's large utilities has indicated it may follow suit. The Missouri Public Service Commission last week approved Ameren Missouri's proposal to build one, and possibly two, 500-kilowatt solar arrays. Ameren's residential and small business customers will have the option of tapping the community array for as much as half of the energy they use. Ameren declined to comment on the project. The company has indicated that it will only begin construction on the first 500-kilowatt array after it is fully subscribed. What of the project tops out at 500 or 1,000 kilowatts will depend on the level of interest among customers. Subscribers will purchase solar power in blocks of 100 kilowatt hours. The electricity from the solar panels is likely to cost slightly more than Ameren's going retail rate, according to Andrew Linhares, an attorney for Renew Missouri, which negotiated with Ameren to determine the specifics of the project. Although the rate hasn't been determined, he estimated that a typical customer getting half of their power from the array might pay an extra $10 or $15 monthly. All right. At this time, I'd like to turn the mic over to Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thank you, naturally. And good evening, everyone. This is, you said, Richard Mabian, for those of you who don't know me. And we're here to talk about the environment. Before I get started, I want to give a shout out to a young lady named Christina. She's in Texas. She grew up here in Kansas City, Missouri. Her father and I were the bestest of friends, and I've been like an uncle to her since she was about 5 years old. I'm not going to tell you how old she is now. I tell that to tell you my age, and you don't tell young ladies' ages, but it's been a while. So hello, Christina. We love you, young lady. I have Zach here tonight because, as usual, we're going to talk about the state of politics in Kansas. We got an election coming up, and I thought this would be a good time to kind of talk about what's going on in the world of politics as it refers to or it relates to the environment. And when I was calling the make contact with him, I actually couldn't call him because it's found out he was not in the country. And I somehow was able to make contact with him by email, which I really wasn't supposed to, but because of the political shenanigans that's been going on since he's been gone, he had to come out of hiding and make contact with folks, and I got a chance to sneak an email in on him while he was doing that and ask him if he would do this show on the 10th, and he so graciously agreed. And so I told him that what I wanted him to do was to talk to us and tell us about his trip to the Balkans. So, Zach, introduce yourself. Say hello to everybody.
Richard, everybody. How are you doing? Good to be back with you.
Hey there, Zach.
Now I want to hear about the Balkans. Just take it and tell us.
Sure. Didn't really have an idea that I would be headed to the Balkan states. I actually got it confused with the Baltics, which is north of the area. All I heard it was kind of a mysterious area to me. Didn't know a whole lot about it, but I knew that they had some history there. This is the site of World War I. Happened there, and they had some civil conflict about 20 years ago.
Okay, so let me get it straight. Now, first of all, I know that usually every year you take a trip somewhere here in the States where you go disappear.
Reconnect with nature, zoom out a little
y'all
bit.
Do this every year. You take off, let us know, I'm gone, I won't see you, and you get rid of cell phones and all that kind of stuff. Yes. You've been doing that, so I know that since I've known you, you've always done it. So was this trip kind of in that perspective?
Oh, yeah. I work pretty hard during the legislative session and spend a lot of the time inside the Capitol working the legislators. And so it's my time to catch a breather, reevaluate things, reconnect with nature.
Okay.
And also see a little bit different part as opposed to being really stuck in Kansas to kind of look around and see what's going on.
Okay, so you head out here going over to the Balkans.
Baltic.
So you head out of here going to the Baltics.
The Balkans, yeah.
You thought you was going to the
Baltics. Yeah, so I got that figured out about halfway through. But before I even ever made it over there, the real kind of prompt was heading to Iceland. And so Iceland was my first stop on the way over to Eastern Europe. And I spent 9 days in Iceland.
Okay.
And that was, it's almost like two separate trips. I was gone a total of 34 days. So 9 days in Iceland and the rest in the Balkan states. When I say the Balkan states, I'm talking about Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, Montenegro for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, so let's go back to Iceland.
Yeah.
So what did you do? What were you doing in Iceland?
Oh, I had a friend who actually got me started on this trip who is kind of globetrotter herself.
Okay.
And she spins all over, and she goes all over the world, been to Australia, South Korea, Alaska, all sorts of places. And she's able to do it by working in the places she's traveling to.
Okay.
So that way she can actually afford it, because, doing a world travel ain't cheap, unless you do a little work where you're at.
Yeah.
So she invited me to Iceland. She was doing 3 months work for the Environmental Agency of Iceland. Conservation work, she'd take care of the trails. Iceland's one of their biggest parts of their economy is tourism. Okay. They got 300,000 Icelandic people. Experience over 1.6 million tourists every year.
Okay.
Quite a few more. So they cater to tourism. And for the folks that have never been there but hope to go there, make sure you save your pennies, because it's pretty expensive over there. One of the more expensive places I've been. We're talking for a burger meal was like $20. Yeah, so save your pennies. But the way I did it to make it cheap was spend a lot of time doing some camping and nature, a few places where I stayed in hostels, kind of community share of living space. And so we ultimately made it as cheap as possible, but it took about a little bit just to get there, about 6 hour travel from Minnesota just to get to the place.
You fly up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And okay, so you're in Iceland and you're camping out. And
yeah.
Also, I'm gonna open up the phones because some of you might out there, some of you may be from Iceland, or some of you may be from the Baltic. whatever, and you might have a question you want to ask, or some of you may be curious about how you do what he's done. So the phone number for that is 816-931-5534. Okay. So you're there with the young lovely, and you're getting the chance to see what's going on over in Iceland. Okay, so so you're taking the tours and you're taking the hikes.
The big goal was to do this 5-day hike through the middle of Iceland. A lot of folks go around the perimeter, and because that's where their kind of major road is.
Okay.
But we went through a hike, and there saw a huge waterfall. I don't know. It was like a 10-story building waterfall.
We have a call already. My goodness. All right, caller, you on the air. Will you give me your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please?
First name, Paul, calling from Olathe.
Yes, sir.
A couple comments. First, on the Balkans, my father came from Croatia, and I'll say that if you want a party, you want to party with people from the Balkans, and if you want the best friend you ever had and the very worst enemy, you want to associate with people from the Balkans. Then on the subject...
All right, go ahead.
On the subject of environmentalism in Kansas, I was about to do some research tonight. I recall that, if I'm recalling correctly, that the Republican Party in Kansas may be supporting a movement to financially penalize solar energy and wind energy in Kansas in favor of the fossil fuel lobby. And as I undertake that research, I was wondering if anyone there could comment on whether I'm on the right track. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you for calling in, Paul, and we'll answer your question offline. And my guy, Zach, was shaking his head as you were speaking, so he does have some information on it. We'll get back to the environmental issues when we get through this Balkan trick. And I hear my friend from Texas called in. Christina?
Yeah, I just wanted to say hi, and thank you for giving me a shout-out.
Oh, that's you deserve that. You're a feature of my life, you know. So I want to make sure that I let folks know that somebody who I truly love is on the line listening, along with Foos. Foos is at home listening too, so it's good for you to her to hear your voice too. So thank you for calling me, okay?
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, I live in Shreveport, and I'm dealing with a lot of stuff that's going on in this area right now. So
okay,
I appreciate your backing and everything that's going on right now. So, but this whole going to Iceland thing sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, we'll sit back and relax and enjoy it, okay?
All right. Well, I just wanted to say thank you. I love you.
I love you too, babe. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Yeah, my listeners, y'all just have to be jealous, okay? Okay, come on, Zach.
Hey, I recommend
it. I was going to ask you, okay, so... Oh. In Iceland, when you out there on the trail, I mean, is it just a bunch of people hiking and stuff?
Yeah. This was one of the trails called the Landmannalaugar Trail.
Okay.
And it's about a 4-day trek, and you go through two glaciers with volcanoes under the glaciers, and it's one of the more famous treks in Iceland, but it was actually rated as a top 10 trek of the whole world by National Geographic. So... pretty exciting, and surely didn't disappoint. For a while on the trek, I had a rainbow in front of me for 2 hours. If I'm ever going to find the pot of gold, it's going to be this time. You know, one of the volcanoes erupted as early as 2010.
Okay.
Shut down a lot of air traffic and all that. The other one's overdue to erupt. So you kind of got that in your mind when you're walking through, but walking on lava fields, walking on glacial moraine, the silt, the glacier deposits, and then through the mountains, no trees, which was pretty amazing. You're kind of on places that looks like the moon, and you have glowing mountains of green, kind of glowing green mountains, but there's no trees. It's pretty amazing, and no real large wildlife either. You
That's
see sheep, you see Arctic fox up in the northern region, but other than the horse, there's no real large predatory, well, large animals to begin with, but predatory animals for sure.
This is Iceland.
Iceland.
Okay. Okay. That was going to be my question because you know my concern being an inner city boy is animals.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of my main concerns.
Hey, this is one of the safest places in the world, not just from animals, but society. Iceland,
but it's beautiful, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's just unbelievable.
And,
okay.
But the Balkans were equally as beautiful. Maybe we can talk about those here in a little bit.
Yeah. This is Mike jumping in here. I do want to let folks know that we have extended the fund drive this week. We're just doing it during certain programs. And Jeff and Spencer are in the phone room in the KKFI Phone Central, anxious to hear from you. If you think environmental programs such as Eco Radio KC have an important place on your community radio station, if you think it's important to have a community radio station and haven't made a contribution yet during our fall fund drive, I'm asking you to consider doing so right now. We'd love to get several phone calls. That number to call is 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. I look every week and see not only are people listening every week and people are calling in from all over. Isn't that right, Richard?
That's right. They call.
But also lots of people are downloading the Eco Radio podcast.
Right.
It's become, you know, so it's catching on, but we need support. We need to shore up this valuable asset we have called community radio. I just came from the Grassroots Radio Conference. Jeff Humpfeld and I, Jeff who's in the other room, did a quick jaunt down to Hot Springs, Arkansas over the weekend. We left here Friday right after pitching Third Democracy Now, drove down there. What a great conference. It's so reinvigorating to be with community radio people from all over and realize that some of your trials and tribulations are not so unique. And it's an amazing thing. But some of our issues are unique because we're Kansas City. No one else is Kansas City. We're the Kansas City Community Radio Station. And another way we are unique is we have 100,000 watts. So many community radio stations are so envious of that. We can reach, you know, on a good day up to St. Joe or almost to Topeka some days. We can reach a lot of people. And there's wonderful possibility here. And when you're doing a program that's environmentally focused, it's important. It's important to be able to reach people in the city, in the rural areas, and we do that. And we need your support. 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. You can go online as well at kkfi.org. And while you're there, you can look at the new T-shirt. If you contribute at a $90 level or more, you can get the KKFI T-shirt, and it's designed by Dick Daniels. The $150 level, you could be the guest DJ. That number to call, 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. Jeff and Spencer, ready to take your call. Show your support for community radio. Show your support for local programming such as Eco Radio KC. And show your support for the man that they're calling in all the way from Shreveport.
That's right. With love. With love. Don't leave that out.
So 888-931-0901.
Yes, ditto, Mike, on everything you said. I don't have my paperwork and stuff in front of me. Mike don't need it. It's in his head. But I agree with him 100%. We put this show on for you because, one, we're very conscientious and concerned about the environment. And it always amazes me when people call in where they're calling from, the caliber of people that are sitting out there listening to us. And I just want to say that we appreciate you, and we need you, and we need your help. So if you can, you call that number, 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901. Okay, Zach, we end up in Iceland. You're there for 9 days. Then when you got to the end of your trip, your hiking and stuff, and you're camping out and all, did you cook out or did you go in, did you eat on the road or did you, you know, how did you do
for that? For this trip, for the 5 days, you're pretty much bringing all your food with you.
Okay. All right.
And so you're out there. You got your backpack. Yeah. Everything is on your back, which is pretty humbling.
Yeah.
You know, that you got to take everything. You're cooking it in strong winds.
Okay.
Rain.
That's the next thing I was going to say. How was the weather?
Oh, it was one of the more chaotic weather climates I've ever been.
Okay.
It's just amazing. We had up to 40-mile-an-hour winds. Okay. It would just jump back and forth, be really nice during the day, so high 60 degrees, and then, you know, 40s at night. So it was pretty cool.
Going back and forth.
And then I left right before the Northern Lights.
Oh,
but
wow.
They're seeing them, a couple weeks ago. It was really beautiful, but the stars were still amazing. So.
Okay, you get to the end of your 9 days, then where do we go?
Then I fly over through Germany to Croatia.
Oh, you just own it, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, and one interesting thing, I never had it happen, but on the way through to Zagreb, Croatia, we're flying a German airline, and we do a touch and go. And for those that don't know what a touch and go is, when you're landing, you almost run out of runway and you take right back off. And so someone who never experienced
that. I mean, what was that for?
I think it was safety, so you don't just land and go off the runway, but you
wait a minute.
Come back up. Yeah.
I mean, did they not land right and they had to go up and do it again?
I think, yeah, exactly. I said, you know, they're saying it in German. I don't know any German. And all I hear is touch and go, and then they come on in English and say, hey, this is kind of a normal procedure we do when we have experience a loss of runway space. We're just coming back around. We'll land you in 7 minutes. So that was pretty amazing. Good entrance. It's good to be alive.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's
landed in Croatia, and the way we got around, you could take transportation, but for where we wanted to go in the mountains, we really needed to kind of get where we needed to go, so we rented a car.
Okay.
And it was really cheap, really affordable. For 3 weeks, it was a little bit more than $300.
Okay.
So that was amazing, and it wasn't a scam. It was a real deal. And so it took a little while to figure out what kind of car we drive. We thought we could get away with a manual transmission, realized an automatic was probably the best way to go through the mountains. That's a whole nother story, but it's a really amazing of the places in the Balkans are about the square area size of Kansas. And so you got four countries that I went to that are about the size of Kansas, which is pretty amazing to put it in perspective.
Right.
But this is a place that's got such a deep history of multiculturalism, of conflict because of some of the tension there. You got three major religions in the area, and Catholicism, Eastern Orthodox, and Islam, Muslim.
Yeah. Of this there. So is there any friction going on?
Yeah, so I learned it was where the World War I kind of started there with the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah.
And so I knew it was in the area, but when the tour guide said, yeah, it's right down there, right in front of that building right there. I said, whoa, how about that? I'm in the interesting spot.
Let me get the number out there again. We're going to be taking a break here in a second, but I'm going to make sure I had the number to you again, 816. Now, this is the number for calling in, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Go ahead.
And then 20 years ago, I was in Bosnia and learned about Sarajevo, and I was in Sarajevo, and about 20 years ago, they experienced one of the modern genocides of our time. 20 years ago, for 4 years, Sarajevo was under siege. There was also conflict in Kosovo,
right.
There was this kind of ethnic conflict there,
right.
And these countries are kind of separated on ethnic religious bounds too. So it was just amazing.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't they arrest that the person that was over one of those countries for that ethnic cleansing that they was doing? If I'm not mistaken, do you remember, Mike? Do you remember if they arrested that guy that was over that ethnic cleansing that was going on in Kosovo? Not Kosovo.
You might know more than I do, Richard.
Yeah, I remember that happening. Yeah, I'm a little older than
it's
you.
It's
just
amazing. Well, hey, it's just amazing seeing folks my age, you know, and everybody's been through the war.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. Yeah. You interact with people in this extreme level of hospitality, kindness. It was just an amazing thing that I experienced, but it's kind of like being in the Midwest. You get that hospitality a little bit, but to think that people had to stay inside for 4 years, dodging, you know, snipers if they were going across the street or whatever, running across the street, and then hearing a bombing every day, it's just pretty amazing.
So how have they built back the infrastructure, like homes and buildings and that kind of stuff? Are they kind of built back?
Yeah. They still have some, you know, rubble, damaged buildings, bomb buildings that you could see, but you really got to seek it out. You can see shrapnel in the sides of buildings, but really they've gotten a lot of aid to transform things, and they take pride in transforming, getting beyond that. Yeah. So.
How is the water? Is the water healthy? I mean, to drink and.
Yeah. I was really surprised. I was curious about that myself because. During the war, there was only really, as I understand it, in Sarajevo, one major source of water that they get to. And it was actually funny. It was at the beer, the brewery, the beer factory, because they had a large source of water built on a spring.
Wow.
And the area does have great natural springs, but a lot of it was polluted. A lot of it was cut off during the war. And so a lot of folks had to make the trek to the brewery to get their water. But it was fine to drink. It was okay to drink.
Why don't we take a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break now. We'll be back to you. This is KKFI. Richard Mabian talking to you here with Zach talking about his trip to the Balkans.
And I just want to remind you, Jeff just waved to me. The number to call is 888-931-0901. 888-931-0901. Jeff is anxious to hear from you. We'd love to get... your contribution to Community Radio, 888-931-0901.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. What's bad for farmers is bad for all of us. And as the climate changes, many farmers are struggling to adapt. Laura Lennick is a soil scientist and consultant who specializes in climate risk management.
The most challenging effect all over the country is what I like to call too much and not enough water. We're getting very heavy rainfalls punctuated by fairly long and relatively severe droughts.
Crop quantity and quality can suffer as a result. Too little rain and plants dry up, but too much can make the roots rot. Farmers are doing their best to prepare.
For example, a farmer who maybe has never needed irrigation or drainage on their farm is now considering investing in both of those new technologies.
But adapting is not easy. And when crops fail, the effects trickle down to the rest of us. For example, the ongoing California drought means more produce may have to be imported. And a longer journey can mean wasted energy, higher costs, and lower quality. So, while only 2% of Americans are farmers, we may all experience the impact of climate change on our dinner plates. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Eco Radio KC. And yes, we are still asking for contributions to KKFI. Something that we all value, that we all treasure. I know you value this station. You've discovered this little treasure hidden down on the left end of the dial, and that says something about you right there, that you're willing to stray off the beaten path, that you're not into cookie-cutter radio, that you want something different and something real. And KKFI is certainly different and certainly real, and... if you think that's worth supporting, please consider now picking up that phone. Jeff is in there, ready to take your call, 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901. This is the program that covers the issues right here in our own community, in both Missouri and in Kansas, and worldwide and nationally. If you think this is an important service, if you think this is good that people get to hear this program, please make sure that it's available for people who haven't discovered it yet. So for the person who tunes in next year, make sure it's there for them. 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901. All right, I'm getting off my soapbox, Richard.
That's all right. 888-931-0901. right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you. Going back to Zach here, you got two numbers now you're dealing with, one for the donation for the station itself, and then the one that we're using for you to call in if you have a comment for my guy. Our number is 816-931-5534. I wish I could sit here, Zach, and just continue going on with you about the trip. It's interesting. It's exciting. You and I have to do it over a couple of beers somewhere,
sure.
Okay? But right now, I want you to kind of give me a summary of that, and then we're going to go into this environmental.
Sure. Just want to say that, I caught this from one of our tour guides that said, it's still a mysterious place. I think people are still nervous because of the history of the conflict, that it's a dangerous place. She said to make sure that everybody knows that it's a peaceful place. They've come to be peaceful. They really value that. They don't want to see the conflict and violence that they've seen in the past, so that's an amazing thing. And then also the nature. It's a really affordable place to travel. Unlike Iceland, was really expensive. Mm-hmm. You could get a really nice meal for really cheap there. And want to speak volumes of the people being so kind, invite you in, sit you down with a cup of coffee. They hardly speak the language, you know. So unless you know it, it's just amazing. The mountain ranges, the beaches, everything there is really nice too. So I encourage that some beautiful spot in the world.
Okay. All right. Let's start out with you answering my guy's question that called in. Let's get that right off the top.
Yeah. Paul from Olathe, appreciate your comment. There was a strong discussion last year about whether we should put a tax on renewable energy. The wind industry is one of the bigger businesses growing in Kansas, while some of the state budget's been suffering, and some of the other industries, agriculture's down. The airline industry has been a little bit stalled for a little while. But the renewable energy industry, especially wind, is on the boom. Getting more and more wind turbines put up, more and more farmers cashing in on that wind crop, per se. And solar is adding more jobs all the time. Residential solar is becoming a thing. Commercial solar, putting it up on businesses, is becoming bigger. And that makes a lot of sense. Kansas is second as far as potential for wind energy, and in the top 10 for solar energy. So it would make sense we use these homegrown clean energy resources for our own state, as opposed to paying a state like Wyoming for 60% of our energy needs to transport dirty or coal into Kansas. So the wind and solar is a big thing. Now, we made a compromise. There was a compromise that was reached that said, instead of rolling back and adding taxes on wind energy and solar energy for the future, which really stifle our growth in Kansas, the fossil fuel industry said, we'll make the renewable energy standards our goal to go 20% by 2020, which we surpassed. We're at about 24% renewable energy right now in Kansas, most of that being wind. To make that law into a voluntary goal, that we already reached. So as environmental lobbyists, I said that wasn't good enough. We ought to increase the standard, especially if it's going to be voluntary. But that was a compromise that they reached to make that standard into a voluntary goal in exchange for no taxes on wind and solar.
So that's what we're dealing with voluntary now.
Correct. And we're the only one of two states, I think, to roll back that renewable energy standard.
Okay.
And there's a lot of economic studies that show that those laws actually were very positive for the states that enacted them to grow their economy, but also the renewable energy sector.
Now, I think Kansas is, just from being associated with the Sierra Club and you, I think we're out front on a lot of those issues that are going on. I mean, we're getting some of the negative side of it, but we're out front. Let's talk about your top concern.
Sure.
1, 2, 3, till we run out of time.
Sure, sure. Well, I guess before we go in that, Richard, if you don't mind, let's talk about where we're at in the legislature.
That's good.
Because elections coming up. That's number one.
That's number one.
Okay. Is the who.
Right.
Not the what, but the who, because as it doesn't matter sometimes in my experience. Now, this will be my sixth year coming up. You can have the best arguments. You can lay them out. They can logically, they can economically make sense. But you got the people that aren't there looking out for the people, but are looking out for special interests, you know, whether it's a fossil fuel industry or whatever. They're not going to be too kind to some of your ideas if you're talking about environmental progress.
Right.
That competes. Their interests, per se. So getting the right people in the job is the biggest thing. We got 54 legislators already locked in. So roughly a third of the legislators are locked in. We got 111 more to be decided in November. We're going to have a lot of new faces. What we saw in the primaries is a moderate swing to folks that really would say, hey, we want to fix the broken budget. The tax issue we're going out, we're getting cuts for our schools, cuts for our arts programs, and a number of other programs. State air quality program, we're talking about water. State Water Plan Fund hasn't been funded from the state budget in about 5 or 6 years.
Mm.
And that's a $6 million transfer. And that's the transfer that's on the books. That's in writing. We haven't made that transfer for one of the most important issues.
Yeah, you told
us
about that. So, nobody's doing anything about it.
Right,
it's,
right.
It says
they're coming up with
to.
A lot of ideas, but you got to put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
You actually got to fund the programs in order to do something about that.
Okay.
So that kind of transition, water would probably be one of our top issues this legislative session coming up. Once we get those folks in there,
okay, when you say that, that's going to be one of our top issues. What's the issue on water?
The big issue on water is that we're running out of water
okay. In
western Kansas. Some places in Kansas have less than 20 years of water supply left. Some feel like even less. We're talking about the Ogallala High Plains Aquifer that is responsible for a great portion of our agriculture in the Midwest as far as groundwater. And a big boom to Kansas, really necessary to grow the agriculture in western Kansas,
okay,
right?
So,
irrigation and all that
so
stuff.
So what is the policy or the issue designed to address that? What do we want?
So we want to push better crop selection. So research for innovative crops to use less water.
Okay.
Okay, so a better choice of crops. You know, corn is heavily subsidized, so farmers say, well, when it comes to corn, we'll do corn and beans and maybe some wheat in between, and that'll cover our agricultural cycle because that's where the subsidies are from the federal government. There's not a whole lot of push for other types of crops because they don't feel like that's economically viable.
Okay.
Okay, we're also talking about technology. Putting the water closer to the ground through drip irrigation or running lines underground, less evaporation, less water to be had. But the biggest thing is I say this, that 20% of our farmers in Kansas, the ones that are irrigating, are using 80% of the state's
mm-hmm.
water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The legislature is considering this idea to raise a tenth of a cent of sales tax on everything. To increase funding for the water plan. Okay, my argument is, why are we increasing a cent of sales tax, even though that would bring in quite a bit of money, on people when it's not the ordinary people that are using all the water,
right.
It's the heavy irrigators. I think they should have to pay for the water that they're using, when 80% of the other farmers aren't using that much water.
Right.
So,
yeah. Hey, along the lines of water, I want to let our listeners know that Thursday at noon, our friends from H2O Radio, who do This Week in Water, that close out our program, they're going to be on this week's Sprouts, and they're talking to NASA scientists and NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory about concerns about our disappearing water supply as a global issue. And so that's Thursday at noon. We can hear more about that. I just wanted
to
jump in and make that point. I wanted to ask you, though, if it's okay, about, like, when we had the George Frazier on, the guy that wrote The Last Wild Places in Kansas, he said something to us that hadn't stuck to me before, that Kansas has the lowest percentage of public land of any state. It's less than 2%.
Yeah.
And so how much do you think that plays into?
I think it's less than 1%.
Really? Seriously? Yeah,
I think so. Public land. Absolutely. I think 99, from my statistics that I know, is like 99.4% of land in Kansas is private.
Hmm.
So that makes it a little different.
Yeah.
Because those water rights, per se, and we've granted thousands, I think over 30,000 water rights since we came up with some of our water policy. Basically, we've allocated too much water to private people, to private landowners, so they can take the water. And now they have to reapply for the permit, but because they've gotten the permits in the past, it's hard to take it away from them. Now, if you're dealing with private landowners, you have to make the case, and a lot of times it's going to have to be economic, because you know, what is your incentive as one person if your neighbor is using more water, because that water is coming from the same place? What's my incentive to stop using more water or conserving my water supply when I know my neighbor is going to just take more?
Right.
So it has to be kind of by consensus. And they've had some success in northwest Kansas in trying to get people to cut back, where everybody said, hey, let's all cut back together. And they've come to sort of agreement. They've tried to do that in other places. They haven't reached that agreement. So at what point does the state have to step in and say, we need to do this because this is a public good?
Right.
Water is, by definition, a public resource.
Yeah. Isn't there some kind of use it or lose it incentive there?
Right. We finally changed the policy after years of having this policy of use it or lose it, where if you were allocated so much water in your water right, if you didn't use that, then it was gone. You couldn't use it the next year. But now we have a recycle program where you can use it over the next 5 years.
Oh, so that's better.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. But that's just a small step when we need a big step. I mean, we're talking about 70% of our aquifer being gone.
Right.
In the next 30 years.
You know, we always have you in talking about what's happening at the state legislative level, and those things are always hot, and we never really take the time to take a subject like we're talking about now and discuss it, because when you tell me we got some places less than 20 years of water left, and we're going to go into all these dynamic-type processes to slow down and save, but there's an inevitability that we're going to use this water up.
Yeah, it's a strong possibility. We got
to
change.
I'd like for us to have a conversation of then what? Because whether it's 60 years or another 80 years, you know, there's going to reach a point in the state of Kansas that our water supply is going to be diminished.
Right.
It's kind of like peak oil. We're going to reach a point, regardless of what year is going to happen. In our future, we have those kinds of circumstances facing us. And the only reason I'm saying that, because we talk about energy renewable, we talk about all of these different processes, we got to start making people aware of the fact of how those processes are going to be a factor in what we're talking about happening.
And get ahead of the game.
Yeah.
I heard on the show last week, on the Eco Radio show last week, is that oftentimes we're there when it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, the rivers are already catching on fire.
Right.
The smog is already there. The ozone's already got a hole in it.
Right.
Why don't we try to get ahead of this? And water is a big one. We've been talking about whether we're going to have water wars in the future for a while.
Right.
Climate change, we've been talking about whether that's going to how bad that's going to be for a while.
Yeah.
Now's the time to get ahead on these things. We see the writing on the wall, but let's go forth with taking some action on it.
Okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do, Zach. We're going to take a break here. We got to squeeze this out, and then I'm going to come back in, and we'll start working toward the end of the show. So we'll be back with you in just a second. This is KKFI Eco Radio.
And this is our fall fun drive. We're taking some time here to break in, remind folks to contribute to community radio, to contribute to environmental programming like you've never heard it before. That number to call is 888-931-0901. We like to shed light on what the problems are. We also like to find solutions, and we also like to share solutions. And that takes a lot of us coming together. And this is where you come in. The number to call is 888-931-0901. Show your support for community radio, and there's a great there's a great T-shirt if you contribute at the $90 level. That number to call again, 888-931-0901. What do you think, naturally?
I think it's a great idea. You know, supporting community radio is something that is good for the listeners here and then the people who have yet to turn us on. I know when they find us down at the bottom of the dial, like Mike said earlier, you know, it's really a game changer because it's an easy way to just really get connected into the community and what's going on around you.
That's right. That's right. That's well said. 888-931-0901. Jeff is ready to take your call at 888-931-0901. Since I don't want to go in too much longer, since we've just got a few minutes left in this program before we turn it over to Natural E for the calendar. So I'm going to say the number. We're going to play a quick promo, and then we'll be back with Richard and Zach. 888-931-0901.
There's a real estate bubble in Kansas City, and it's swelling rents to supersize, especially for the working poor. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll find out why and what are the prospects for more affordable housing. Then, More Squared wants to make development work for all with community benefits agreements. Find out about it this Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
All right, I'm back again. We're going to go ahead and start trying to wrap this up. Zach, like I said, we really need to have you here more often because these subjects are really important to us. And we may try to sneak you back in here before the election. I'm very serious. We're going to have a meeting tonight, and I think I might want to put you back in because we still got topics we need to talk about. Give me some hot topic here in these last few minutes we got here.
Sure. Well, directly related to water is the food picture.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to need a serious look at what our food policy here is in Kansas. It came to my attention that folks in Kansas, on average, spend about $2,700 a year on food, on average. Okay. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. What I realize is that when we're talking about food, we're talking about 36% of adults in Kansas have an obesity problem. A third of our children.
You come in my direction now.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, so when we look at the food plate and we're supposed to get 50% of our food coming from fruits and vegetables, only 10% to 15% of Kansans are doing this.
Right.
Okay. But if you look at our policy and what foods we're growing in Kansas, it doesn't match up with the food plate either. Most of what we're growing in Kansas is the commodity crops, wheat, soybeans, corn. Okay. We're not growing the fruits and vegetables that we need to be putting on our plate. 96% of our fruits and vegetables in Kansas are imported.
Mm-hmm.
We're only growing 4% here in Kansas, okay? We spend $770 billion, no wait, maybe that's $1 million on food, fruits and vegetables in Kansas every year.
Right.
Okay, we have 22 million acres that we grow in Kansas. It would only take 80,000 acres to grow all of our fruits and vegetables here in Kansas. Now, I know we're not getting all of the fruits that we want.
Right,
you know,
right,
we're not
right.
growing bananas in Kansas, but some people are,
and
which is pretty amazing. That's a whole other topic
it's
in itself.
Silly,
but there's no reason for an agriculture state such as Kansas to be importing so much of what we could be growing here in Kansas. It's a loss of jobs and economic activity, and we could be growing healthier, better food for our own people.
Well, you've said it twice since we in there. One is that the 96% of the land is privately owned.
Oh, yeah, 99%.
People are in it to make the money. They're not into it from the perspective that you're saying. And one of the things that first I heard when I went into the environmental movement to show what was going to happen with the collapse and the use of gas with the price going up is that we get our apples and stuff from far away as Australia, you know, and as the gas continues to rise, that by the time we're going to reach a point where a bushel or a bag of apples may cost as much as $20 for a bag of apples. That's where the pressure's going to really start hitting on us as far as having to transfer our food in because of the cost of transportation. Zach, you know, I don't want Mike having a fit over there and start throwing things at me. And we have reached that magic point, but we have to get ready to call it the evening. But I'm telling you, I want you back, so prepare for it. I'm going to have you coming back pretty quick because there's too much going on, especially with the election. And I want to continue talking about these subjects.
Very
thanks
good.
For
hey,
being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir.
Great radio station. Keep up the good work.
All right, gang.
All right, everybody. This is Natural E. Thank you, Richard and Zach. And I got a couple events for you, Kansas City. This Saturday, October 15th from 4 to 7 p.m., Seed Savers KC is hosting their fall festival. This will be at Loud House Farm, which is located at 4300 East 113th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. You can go to Seed Savers KC. You can go to their website and find out more information. But that's this Saturday from 4 to 7 p.m. And also on October 26th in Topeka, Kansas at the Dillon House from 2:30 to 6:30 p.m., Climate and Energy Project will be hosting a policy summit to kick off their Clean Energy Business Council. They will discuss how to grow clean energy jobs and how to utilize Kansas' homegrown clean energy resources. Visit climateandenergy.com for more details. And Mike, do you have any other events?
Yeah, I wanted to share a few things of environmental interest that also are airing on this radio station this week. Well, tomorrow morning at 9 on Law and Disorder, we'll have another legal update about the Dakota Access Pipeline with attorney Jeff Haas. And then tomorrow evening at 6:30, Dar Jamal will be talking on climate disruption in the media. And as I mentioned earlier, the Sprouts episode on Thursday at noon is about NASA scientists on our Vanishing Water Act. And what else? That maybe. Oh, of course, Bioneers, Spirit in the Air, Reform, Revolution, and Regeneration, featuring Tom Hayden. And that takes place Friday morning at 9:30. I think that's all the environmental things we have to tell you about so far. And of course, we'll be back here next week, and we're going to have the same folks what we had last week, climate mobilization folks.
Group, right? So do your homework. So if you got some questions, you can phone them in and talk to them.
Yeah, we'd love to hear more about that and what they've got going on. We are in our pledge drive, and the number to call is 888-931-0901. We're going to go. The folks from H2O Water didn't put together a This Week in Water this week. Instead, they did a little mini documentary on one thing, on the flooding of a town on the Platte River. So we're going to hear that while you call 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. You can go online as well at kkfi.org. But why not call Jeff at 888-931-0901.
It's a warm summer afternoon in Denver, and people are beating the heat by heading down to the South Platte River. It's the waterway that bisects the city on its journey from the Rocky Mountains to the Great Plains.
Today is the 4th annual South Platte River Fest, and activities range from kayaking the rapids to stand-up paddleboarding to just wading in the river's shallow, sandy bottom to cool off. Nothing says summer fun like being by the water on such a hot day.
Maybe this June, but not the one back in 1965.
Probably few playing in the river today would know that just over 50 years ago, this place was the scene of epic devastation. In 1965, a monster storm turned the normally placid South Platte River into a killing machine.
The metro area received 14 inches of rain in just 3 hours, and that sent a 20-foot wall of water carrying propane tanks, cars, tires, telephone poles, livestock, entire mobile homes, just about anything it could scoop up in its path to carve destruction and chaos.
You know, if it was in the way, it went down. There was just no stopping it.
That's Roger Dudley. He was 18 at the time of the flood and had just graduated from Denver's West High School.
That night, I remember getting up on top of my house. We could hear the announcements as they drove around making warnings to people that were in the flood zone down below our house. Well, I got up on top of the roof to look around better, and I saw huge sections of Denver going black.
That's because power plants were situated right along the river.
So all three of the Denver metropolitan power plants were inundated with water, and they shut off the power to save the plants. We didn't lose power at our house. Other areas did, and were out for several days.
When the skies finally did clear, 21 people were dead, 1,700 buildings damaged or destroyed, 16 bridges gone, and many streets impassable. Over time, the river slowly retreated to its banks and to being invisible.
That's because before the flood, the South Platte was a cesspool, lined by factories and junkyards. It was ignored, neglected, and abused.
It's almost as if in June of 1965, the river said, enough is enough, and let loose a fury no one could have imagined.
But it didn't only upend structures. It rearranged how Denver city officials thought about the Platte. One politician in particular was very moved by the disaster. Enter Joe Shoemaker.
My dad was in the state senate at the time.
That's Jeff Shoemaker, Joe's son.
The quick history is that he was manager of public works for Denver in the late 50s and early 60s. And like the managers before him and before him, anything you had that you didn't know what to do with in terms of torn up this or dumpy this or lousy this, you just brought it down to the banks of the river and threw it in because the river was already dead and polluted and rotten. So what's one more load of concrete or one more ton of dirt?
In fact, the river was so ignored, many didn't even know or even care that the South Platte ran through the city.
I come from Iowa farm stock, and we were back in northwest Iowa on the farm. My father, as a state senator, got a call from the governor's office saying, as a Denver legislator, you need to get back here. And my dad came out and said, the river's flooded. I got to get on a plane and get home. And my quote to my dad was, what river?
Back in those days, only poor people had houses near the Platte.
Who else who had money would live near a polluted stream of poo? The point is, in 50 years, it is a complete 180-degree change.
That started with his dad. As a state senator, he led several initiatives, the first of which was to find funding to build Chatfield Dam as a bulwark against future floods.
In 1969, my father carried the legislation and created the Urban Drainage and Flood Control District, and its focus is to make sure that the river is safe and is able to carry water as well and as safely as it can.
But even as the South Platte was on its way to being tamed, it was still ecologically dead. It was said you could hear the flow, but not see the water through all the trash. More than just containing the river was needed.
In 1974, he met with the mayor at the time, Bill McNichols, and together, Democrat mayor and Republican senator co-formed the precursor of the Greenway Foundation called the Platte River Development Committee, and 9 volunteers, absolutely no authority of any kind whatsoever. Just a group of volunteers that got some seed money from the city and said, let's go start to save a river.
The very first project they built was Confluence Park, which is where we're standing now. It's the site of the birthplace of the city of Denver, and
42 years ago, the single most polluted place on the river because it was the combination of Cherry Creek and the South Platte.
The Greenway Foundation, now under Jeff's leadership, has helped to construct numerous trails, parks, and ecosystem restoration projects that have vastly improved the health of the South Platte River.
And all you have to do is look around this town and see where the biggest buzz is, and it's all up and down the river. My dad was quoted back in the mid-70s as saying, someday the best place to work, live, and play will be along the South Platte River in Denver, and he was dismissed as a lunatic.
By the looks of all the people playing in the river today, Joe Shoemaker's crazy notion is a dream coming true.
Is the river healthier today? Significantly so. Are there fish in the river? Yes. Are there trout in the river? To a limited basis? Yes. Is it healthier for birds and for mammals? Yes. Is the river clean enough? No. Not close to being clean enough. Can it be better? Yes.
And for that reason, Jeff and the Greenway Foundation are hard at work helping to improve water quality, and also by promoting events like the one today that reconnect Denver residents to the river that gave the city its start.
I'm asked all the time when we're done. Jeff, you've been at this 35 years, your foundation for 42, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we're asked that all the time. And as I'm doing now, we laugh. There's no done. There's no done at the zoo. There's no done at the art museum. There's no done at the library. There's no done at the symphony. There's no done. And what was polluted for hundreds of years is just finally getting back to where it can be and it should be. My point is, it takes a lot longer to clean up a river than it does to destroy a river. Wouldn't it be great someday for there not to be a need for a Greenway Foundation? And that day ain't going to happen in my lifetime and probably never will, but we go after it every day, man.
This story is the first in our series on the South Platte River. To see pictures of the Great Flood of 1965, visit our website at h2oradio.org. Reporting from downtown Denver, I'm Franny Halperin.
And I'm Jamie Sudler, and you're listening to H2O Radio.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
During the beginning of the 20th century, yet another unique American music form developed. When Mexican-American musicians from Texas began to play the accordions brought by immigrants from Germany and Czechoslovakia, the result was Tejano, or Tex-Mex music.